Hello, my fabulous radio listeners, and welcome to yet another episode of Sex Talk. I'm your host, DJ Chain Gang. And tonight we have an especially vital and important sex talk. Our news alarms and teletypes have been printing, running continuously since about 2 weeks ago when, as you all know by now, there was the long arm of the law descended on the Carnegie Mellon University campus and arrested 10 men for lewd and lascivious behavior on the CMU campus. We've assembled a team of sexual experts, pansexual personalities, and legal experts to discuss this issue, and we are eager to get the opinion of you, the radio listener, as well. So,
to our listeners, if you're not quite sure exactly what lewd and lascivious conduct is, that will be explained in a second. First, though, we should let you know our phone number if you want to call in. It's 621-9728, as always, here on the Carnegie Mellon campus, 89728.
And if you're actually calling from the Allegheny County Prison, I believe, well...
Can we accept the collect charges?
We'll accept collect charges. I think we can accept collect charges and also... I hit a shiv like in under my bed right under the mattress there, so in case so Bubba, in case that's necessary, I'm not going to go there. So I'd actually like to introduce this show by reading a paragraph from the Carnegie Mellon's flagship newspaper, The Tartan.
Should we introduce our guest very quickly first?
No.
Okay.
You can wait.
Police arrest men for public lewdness. Campus police arrested a total of 10 men for open lewdness and disorderly conduct last weekend in 4 separate incidents. See, that's the part that I already don't understand. 10 men, 4 incidents. There's at least one...
2.5 men per incident.
Well, there's at least one threesome.
Maybe a foursome.
The arrest took place in the Doherty Hall A-level men's room after campus police witnessed the actors involved in various sexual activities.
So they were all from CFA, then?
One would assume.
3 of the actors were CMU students, and the other 7 were Pittsburgh residents between the ages of 28 and 60, according to police report.
Come on.
So we've assembled a panel of experts, campus homosexuals Andy and Tom, who have been on the show many times before and have provided their insight on a wide range of sexual activities. Jody, I don't know how to thinker, poet, philosopher, and op-ed writer Jody.
Woman.
Thank you for joining us,
Woman.
Jody. Woman. And, of course, Sebastian and... I'm sorry, I forgot your name.
Well, Owner Inseminator was going to be my name, but you deemed it unacceptable. So I would be known as No Name.
No Name it is.
It works best.
So thank you all for joining us. So I guess the first question I would like to ask the group is, you know, where were you when you first heard that this happened, and what was your reaction?
I heard about it 2 days ago.
I was in the bathroom in Doherty Hall when I first noticed. I read it in the paper, I think, actually, for the first time that's how I first heard it.
So have you actually been in Doherty Hall since the incident? Because if you've been there, it's actually. I mean, I say this sort of only half humorously, but it's literally when I went in there were literally 21 posters saying police frequently patrol this area. I mean, I think now there is no doubt in my mind that police are frequently patrolling.
Did they cover up the holes with the posters?
No, they didn't. I was actually able to.
They were right next to the holes. They're neon yellow, and they're right next to the holes. I went in to look.
Wait, are there actual posters on the stalls?
They're flyers. They're like neon yellow copy paper flyers.
Okay.
It sort of, I mean, it would be kind of cool to put over the hole, and then you could sort of burst through the poster like Shamu bursting through, you know, like a big...
Make an entrance.
But, I do make light of this issue a little bit because of my own sort of... abusive, flawed childhood, but the issue is actually fairly serious, and actually an acquaintance of mine was one of the people arrested, not the 60-year-old, who's actually a very attractive younger man, was one of the people arrested and actually ended up spending the weekend in Allegheny County Jail. And so it was unpleasant for him and unpleasant for the other 9 as well, I'm sure.
Maybe it wasn't.
What?
Maybe it wasn't. Maybe it was.
Well, you know, see, I mean, it's important to actually separate, you know, gay jail fantasy from gay jail reality.
Gay jail experience.
Should we go through chronology of what actually happened?
Yes, that sounds like a good idea.
So, this bathroom, we've discussed it on the show before, I don't know what's sort of the right word for these sorts of quasi-public anonymous sex locations.
I think it's a tea room.
Tea room.
A tea room, okay.
But no one knows why it's called a tea room.
The T stands for toilet.
Oh.
Toilet room, tea room.
Oh, okay. So this tea room has been in existence as a functioning tea room for a long time. It's listed in some of the internet sites that list tea rooms across the country, right? Yeah. Then a couple of weeks ago, CMU campus cops put up posters in that area saying this area is frequently patrolled, correct? The posters were there for a while, then they were torn down. They were put back. They were sort of torn down after a few days, though, and vandalized and defaced at some point. Then about a week after the posters went up, there was somewhat of an undercover sting operation where undercover CMU policemen went into the bathroom. I don't know exactly how they busted people. And came out, you know, at the end of presumably a long day of work with, you know, 10 people.
So I can, according to CMU Campus Police Chief LaPaglia, he said that the way they busted people was they were timing people, and if they spent an unusual amount of time in the bathroom, then they would go in there and see if they could witness, hear, or see any kind of sexual activity.
So that was their metric for somebody with the intention of just going to the bathroom would be quick and somewhat prompt, whereas if somebody was interested primarily in sexual activity, it would take them longer, right? That was the theory behind that, right? So the busts were made. People were taken not to whatever CMU criminal processing facilities there are, but to the actual Allegheny County Jail, where they ended up spending a couple of days in jail due to some weird thing with the behavioral counselor that didn't allow them to get out on bail immediately.
Right, and that weird thing was, so they were immediately seen by the magistrate, and it's that person's decision to set bail and to decide whether they need to see this behavioral counselor before leaving. And I believe, and this is what LaPaglia has said, and I believe him, that CMU police's intent was just to kind of do the usual thing, take them downtown, process them, make them post bail, and, you know, be out in 4 hours or whatever. But this magistrate made this decision that they all had to see the behavioral counselor before being released. And this person is usually, his job is usually to figure out if you're suicidal or you're a threat to society or whatever. And he was also just not around. And nobody knew when he was coming. And they spent those 2 days of the weekend waiting for him to show up. And he finally did show up on Sunday. And it was actually a little bit tense because no one knew he was coming, and also Monday was a holiday. I forget what holiday it was, President's Day or something, or someone's birthday. And so they weren't even sure. They thought it might be as – they were arrested Friday. They thought it was possible that they'd be there as late as Tuesday morning before they'd get out. Mm-hmm. And the police didn't know or weren't saying when they would be released. And so that was pretty stressful for them.
But they're now out on bail, and so nothing has really happened since except – a lot more of this area's heavily patrolled posters have gone up, some apparently in the bathroom itself. Where the posters were originally there, were they up in the bathroom? I don't
– there were like – the first wave of posters, there were like three or four. There were one maybe on the door and one posted sort of outside. And then in the second wave of posters, they're basically everywhere on every available surface. Mm.
Well, so now that the events are sort of out in the open, there's a whole set of questions about this that sort of we should tackle, right?
Right, and the first is, where's my toast?
What?
I bet it's still in the jail commissary. That's my bet. Well, we actually have here somebody who has already spoken out in a public forum about this event, Jody. The writer who wrote an editor for the Tartan. So why don't you tell us what you think of the events in question?
I think that the arrests were overkill. Like, I think that, first of all, I've been at CMU for 5 years, and my mother has been working here much longer than that, and I've had a lot of gay male friends, and I've never heard about this bathroom thing going on before, even though, I don't know, everyone says they've heard about it. I never heard about it. So if they did know what was going on, I think that the most logical thing to do would have been to just go in there and fill the holes in. Like, I'm not saying I exactly think sex in the bathroom is appropriate, but I don't think it warrants taking somebody to jail. I mean, people have sex in weird places all the time. If you're going to go after all of them, you're going to have the jails filled up pretty quickly. So
they actually did fill the holes up at one point. They tore down the old bathroom stalls, put up new ones, and then within a few days, new holes were cut.
It took a while for the holes to reappear.
Did it take a while? I figured somebody, an architect would just come down with a sawzall. And
it was little by little. Like, there's a line. Then eventually, the whole triangle fell out. And it wasn't me, no.
Right, so it's actually, I mean, just to expand on that, on the history of that story a little bit, I mean, I remember when that happened, there was actually, the previous bathroom was actually kind of destroyed. I mean, it was in this period of someone had ripped down the stalls and ripped off the doors, and the thing was just a mess for actually several months. I was actually under the impression that someone had vandalized it, you know, some student or some group of CV affiliates was just, that was their way of dealing with the situation was to destroy the bathroom. Yeah. And it was that way for, I mean, do you remember this? Was that way for several months. Mm-hmm. And then finally the university renovated it. And, you know, I think to their credit, they kind of tried. I mean, the walls of the new stalls are, it's this very kind of hard, thick plastic. I mean, you would actually have to have some kind of cool electric saw to drill through it. And I guess it's actually basically what they drill the hole and then saw out a little triangular aperture. But as there has been activity in that room, and that was 4 or 5 years ago, do you think?
I think the bathrooms were redone, 4 or 5 years ago.
And there's been pretty consistent activity over the past 5 years. And this is the first time in that period that I've heard of a set of arrests like this.
Right. I think there was a crackdown before the renovation, but I can't remember exactly when.
Well, you can just check your own jail.
Yes, thank you.
Why didn't they put metal partitions in then?
That's a good question.
Wouldn't those be harder to get through?
It would probably also be more expensive.
God forbid.
Heaven forbid, yes.
True. Well, there's a couple. I mean, I think there's two key issues here. One was whether or not the bust should have been made at all. One was whether or not it was sort of proper to enforce the sort of public decency ordinances. And second, whether or not it was whether or not the CMU cops handled it appropriately.
Well, I think that if you're discussing whether or not the arrests were necessary, you need to kind of consider what the alternate options were or are. I mean, mm-hmm. You have a bathroom that's been recognized for years as a rendezvous meeting place for hard up gay men, mm-hmm. and despite repeated attempts by the authorities to stop the behavior by patrolling and by putting up signs, it keeps happening. So beyond arrests, what would other possible solutions have been?
They could have put up signs saying, please go to the Cathedral of Learning.
Right. Yeah, but the stalls got taken off of those doors.
So I have multiple reactions to your comments, and I'll try to order them in some sensible way. I mean, I think my primary reaction to this is that it was unfair. I mean, we all, you know, if you want to be honest, and I mean, if you want to be perfectly honest about yourself, we all break laws all the time. You know, if there's a stretch of highway where everyone kind of drives 65, then you do too, probably, right? And you know, after a while, you know, you make your own assessment of risk, which involves your own personal morality, whether you're hurting other people, whether you're endangering other people, and also what your sort of likely sort of worst-case outcome is. And so, you know, if you get kind of used to coming here and having sex with people and nobody really seems to mind, you're not, you know, the police aren't harassing you, then you think, well, maybe the university's sort of tolerating it. I might get in a little bit of trouble. But you don't start imagining, gee, you know, I might spend the weekend in jail for doing this behavior.
Well, to follow up on that speeding analogy, I mean, there are people that go 75 on a 65-mile-an-hour road, and they do it 100 times in a row with impunity. And then once they get busted, right, they have no right to complain. Right, because, again, like you said, they knew what was happening. They knew that they could get away with it almost all the time, but they also knew there were risks involved.
Right, so the part of my analogy that I didn't finish up was that they do have a mental model of their risk, and the risk does not include, you know, I'm probably going to get arrested and thrown in jail and trapped there for a weekend. for going 75. Nobody thinks that. You think, I will get a ticket and, you know,
okay,
maybe go to traffic school.
Just for the sake of argument, let's assume that sort of CMU is doing the right thing. I'm not saying this is – I'm not advocating this, but let's just say that CMU is doing the right thing in trying to, you know, move this activity elsewhere or stop it or sort of get it out of that bathroom. If they were to do that, what would be sort of appropriate measures to that effect?
Well, I think – you're asking me?
I'm asking the world.
So I think that I have no problem with them sort of ramping up to a policy of arresting people, but I think, you know, you should make it clear to all the players that that's what's going to happen. I just don't like the sort of surprise tactics. You know, we're radically changing our –
I don't feel like it is a surprise. They did. They put up the signs before. They were taken down. It's like smoking marijuana in your dorm rooms. I mean, you know it's against policy. Sodomy in Pennsylvania, or you know, any act of like sex outdoors or in a public place is illegal. You know that, so you're taking that chance.
Right.
So it's not a surprise. It wasn't like a surprise.
Right. Well, so the problem with what you're saying is that the first time they put up posters, there were only a few of them, and they were taken down almost immediately, and so many people that went there probably didn't know about it, and so I think the police should have been more aggressive about keeping the posters up. I think that as part of this ramping up, they could have arrested people and given them a warning and let them go. They didn't have to arrest and jail people, you know, the first time around.
I can't imagine any place in the United States where a, quote, tea room or glory hole, whatever you want to call them, are legal. I mean, there's holes cut out in the stalls. You know what goes on. It's not for, like, to find a view because there's no window near you. You know? I mean, you know what's going on. How can you even rationalize that?
Well, so, but I mean, there are lots of things that are legal that don't – I mean, there is a question of how you enforce things. You don't always sort of, like, slam the full weight of the law down on somebody when they break the law. I mean – you can imagine a scenario the way, for example, campus cops used to deal with drinking. If they caught somebody drinking, right, they would handle it internally. Nothing would go down on somebody's criminal record, right? And there would be some sort of punishment or sanction involved. But it wouldn't be as serious as had you been busted drinking for real by the, you know, real cops. And so you can imagine a scenario where the CMU police handled it internally instead of actually turning them over to the city cops.
But we were also dealing with a lot of people. The majority of the people involved weren't CMU students.
Exactly.
There was no affiliation to CMU.
That's true.
So it wouldn't have been – if it were handled strictly by CMU officials, I think that probably would have been inappropriate.
Yeah. Because it was people that were public citizens, you can't use campus police.
Well, why couldn't you have campus police handle the students internally and a campus police hand off the other people to – city police and add, you know, a charge of trespassing or whatever.
Go ahead.
So the letter that was posted by CMU Police Chief LaPaglia actually said that they did not.
Posted where?
I think on a news group.
Okay.
I don't recall which one.
It was CMU student out and graffiti.anonymous-gay-sex.
Very well, then. The letter, I believe, said that that was something they considered but chose not to do because of the sort of fairness issue that if you're going to bust 10 people for the same crime and you're sort of a police officer, right, then you have to be fair with and sort of impartial, independent of whether or not somebody's a student, which I don't know if – I sort of see the weight in that argument, but you could certainly argue the other side too.
I think the way it was handled is probably the most appropriate. I mean, if three CMU if three of the – violators were issued internal citations and sent back to their rooms, and seven were arrested and sent to jail. I don't see how that in any way would have been fair or logical, right, for that matter.
Why couldn't they just find all of them, though? Because if they'd find them, that more than likely would have spread around, and people would be like, oh, they're serious, maybe we shouldn't go there
anymore.
It's
not clear that there was – I don't know anything about this, but it's not clear to me that there was a method, a crime that they could have issued sort of an on-the-spot citation for and not – instead taking them through the usual arrest process. Maybe somebody who understands this should say something more.
I mean, but in the same way that, you know, there are different categories. I don't know the technical terms, but, right, there's speeding is a different offense than sort of public drunkenness, right,
right,
which, you know, requires some sort of, you know, either an arrest. You
right.
can't issue a citation for it. So,
right.
I mean, something like a speeding ticket, if there was some sort of,
right.
like, sexing ticket
right,
that so you could give out at will.
The problem is there's probably no – I would guess there's no crime on the books, but you can – sort of issue a citation for.
Yeah, I
arrest them.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
If there are any cops listening, please feel free to give us a call at 621-9728 to tell us.
My dad's a cop, but I don't think he'd.
Or if you're a campus cop, then that number is
268-9728.
I think basically what it boils down to is, I almost find having an in-depth discussion about it difficult because it seems pretty common sense.
Sorry, keep talking.
Oh, it's sex in a public place. I think any average person, any person walking around would know that sex in a public place is inappropriate, especially in a public place like a bathroom where, you know, somebody actually has to go in there for the appropriate reasons and gets bombarded in the middle of some drastic sex ring.
Okay, so I'm going to interrupt you at that point because we have a caller, and I'd like to get to your issues as well, but the caller comes first in the show, as always. So is the caller in the air?
Hello.
Hi.
How's it going?
Great. Thanks for calling. And do you have a question, comment, or concern to share?
I have a comment to you in particular. I really have, like, difficulty understanding something. It seems like, you know, that you are, you know, reflexively spineless on issues of free speech, but then you turn around and you think that, you know, that people have some right to have sex in bathrooms. And, you know, I personally would think that, you know, that, like, a right to free speech would be, you know, something much more important than a right to have sex in bathrooms. Maybe that's, you know, my own perverse preference here.
It may well be. I think it's possible you're misrepresenting my position. I'm not.
I don't think I'm misrepresenting your position here.
Okay. Well, I'd like to finish my sentence.
Yeah.
I don't think I've used the word right yet. I don't think there's a right to have sex in a public bathroom. I think what we're talking about is whether the university could have had a more measured response to the situation. I am actually in complete agreement that the university has a legitimate interest in ending public sex in that bathroom, but I think they could have done it in a slower, more less abrupt fashion, and in a way that would not have caused all 10 of these men to spend the weekend in jail.
True. U.S. military policy during the Cold War had a measured response for nuclear situations, which started small and built to the big, you know, utter destruction of the Earth scenario. So you could easily imagine something similar happening.
We just discussed, though, that whatever, 5 years ago they had put the signs up before. I mean, at some point, they have to say, okay, enough is enough.
Oh, agreed.
You know, it's just these people's bad luck that it happened on this one time. But I don't understand where free speech comes into it.
I'm not sure that.
This is more just a comment to DJ. But is it Chain? I forget. Chain Gang? Or what is it?
Chain Gang. All right, so I appreciate your comments. Thanks for calling. If anyone else wants to call in, the phone numbers are 621-9728 and 268-9728.
Good night.
Good night. Good
night. So I.
So, right. So I mean, I think either maybe the two of you are misunderstanding me, or maybe I'm not making my point clear. You know, in my mind, it's just an issue of the schedule at which, I mean, you're asking me what else could they have done, and I've given you examples of what else they could have done. I'll give you more examples. They could have posted a security guard outside the door to just stand there.
Cost money.
So now you're giving me a disbelieving expression. Why is that? Why is that impossible?
Because if you really wanted to, you could have sex in any bathroom, and you can't put a cop outside every bathroom.
Well, no. The issue at stake here is that that particular bathroom and the one beneath it, there's only two or three troubled bathrooms in this university. I did not suggest putting a cop outside every bathroom. I'm just saying if this is a trouble spot. Oh, and Producer Kate has a comment?
I thought that there was some comment that it wasn't intentional to have these people spend the weekend in jail, and that it was sort of a miscommunication between the campus police and the city police that they ended up being there in the first place. I mean, was it really the intention of campus police people?
I think that's fair, and I'm glad you pointed that out. Chief Opaglia has said, and I believe him, that his intention was to just have these people sort of taken downtown, processed, post bail, and released. It was the magistrate's decision to make him see this behavioral counselor, and it's possible even that magistrate didn't know that the BC wouldn't be around that weekend, and so it was kind of this chain of events, sort of an unfortunate chain of events that led to this happening. It's, you know, it's a little unfortunate when police, I mean, it's sort of, when police make mistakes, you know, the impact can be a lot more serious than when sort of ordinary citizens make mistakes. But I don't think any particular person wanted this to happen, but it did.
Well, but I don't understand that. I don't even understand why there's an issue. I mean, ethically, like, you know that it's wrong to have sex, or you shouldn't have sex in a public space, a bathroom. I don't think you should have to post any policeman in order to, like, to protect something that you know is wrong.
But ethically, the punishment must fit the crime, right? It is unethical to punish someone in a sort of unjust and excessive way, just as unethical.
They got caught committing a crime.
Sure, sure. But I mean, there are explicit by law decreed punishments for this exact crime, right?
Right.
Which are, well, you know, like, which are being hauled off to jail, right, having a fine, right? I mean, law enforcement is a subtler thing than this because, you know, the cops will often do, I mean, cops will let people off with warnings when they could, right, punish them, right? And right, so, I mean, cops don't always, like, apply the law sort of mindlessly, right? There is this idea of trying to get behavior to stop without, you know, without, like, applying the full weight of the law to people.
Right. But I think there's a reason for this. Certainly the cops involved in the sting operation could have sort of apprehended each individual person and left them off with a warning and, you know, had dealt with the 10 people that way. But I think if perhaps they are concerned that maybe this behavior will return to this bathroom, maybe this behavior will move to another bathroom, and they wanted to really put their fist down and say, we will not tolerate this on campus, then perhaps sort of not necessarily an excessive punishment, but sort of the fully allowable punishment maybe was appropriate, given their goals.
That's a good point. And we actually have another caller, so I'd like to interrupt you all again and invite the caller on the air. Hello, caller.
Hello.
Hello. Did you have a question, comment, or concern to share with us in the listening audience?
Well, I had a comment. There was a quote in the paper, I think, that said that, this is from the police, they said that it wasn't a victimless crime, and the victims were the people who went into the bathroom and were offended by witnessing the sexual activity. So I'm sort of wondering, if I were to go into the bathroom, how offensive it would have been to me? You know, what exactly was going on in there? Would my personal space have been invaded by someone else's genitals? Or would I just hear moaning and groaning in the stall next to me? Or what?
Well, we can all sort of respond to that. I mean, did you want to? I mean, I don't want to just
look at me.
Well, so I have two responses to that, and they actually fall on both sides of the question. I think for the most part, when whatever is going on in there, well, as soon as one of the doors open, people hear that and they scurry back into their stalls and they sit very still and become quiet. And so I think for the most part, the average person sort of would not detect that anything is going on at all. Now, unfortunately, it actually there are some people who sometimes go there who are very blatant in their behavior, and so I think the average person would kind of feel offended by them because, for example, you might be at the urinal and somebody might be looking over at you and they'll look over at you again and look over again, or maybe kind of peek at you from above or below the stall, and that clearly crosses the line into behavior where, you know, the citizens are actually
feel threatened,
and you do, and I think, I mean, in my opinion at least, there's certainly a vibe that the average person would get that they would not be comfortable with, and if they, even if they didn't realize it was sexual, they might feel threatened. They might see, you know, they might feel like this person was a robber or some kind of criminal, right, because he kept on kind of freakishly looking at you, and so, you know, I think that there is an element of that. I think, you know, honest people have to really decide how much of their discomfort is sort of kind of sexual prudishness and homophobia, and how much of it is a genuine respect for people's privacy. And I think people's feeling, I mean, I think there's a little bit of both in a lot of people's reactions. But I, you know, I acknowledge that there's a genuine kind of discomfort that people would feel. So I don't know if you have any sort of follow up to that.
I would like to say that I have seen some pretty outrageous behavior in there that, you know, maybe I would stop in to use the urinal and I'd be urinating, and the door would creak open behind me, and there would someone be in all their glory. And
someone would actually be
masturbating behind me, and I've actually witnessed this.
Really?
Yes. So that caused me to leave immediately.
And you didn't invite that in any way other than being...
No, I was just happened to be at the urinal.
Young and gorgeously attractive.
Of course.
But... Right, so, I mean, I think, you know, you could sort of argue from any kind of first principles that that's likely to make sort of the average person, I mean, it's uninvited kind of sexual advances, which I think most people agree are undesirable.
So there's really no ground for arguing for leniency from this point of view, in other words.
Well, that was a logical leap I wasn't prepared to make. I mean, you know, if the masturbating person were, like, you know, executed, I would argue for leniency.
And one can imagine a world where the sort of sexual behavior that happened. I mean, we've talked about tea rooms on the show in the past, and the impression I've always gotten from them is that an extraordinary amount of care is given to sort of not betray what's going on. An extraordinary amount of care is given often to not betray what's going on. To people who are in the bathroom who you don't know, like who people don't know are sort of there for sex, right? And so it's possible to separate out, you know, sort of flashing and public masturbation from the sort of more discreet forms of activity. And so, you know, I don't think anyone would have argued that if had a cop been in there and somebody would have, like, you know, sort of like tapped him on the shoulder and started masturbating, that the cop would have been perfectly within his rights to, you know, haul him downtown. So it's not. I think the leap you made is a little bit of a strong one. Although there is some truth to the fact that this behavior does affect the average user of the restroom.
The first stall didn't have any holes on it. If that means anything. Yes,
it did. It had a small like pinhole, like for an eye opening.
Oh, I missed that.
And also had no latch.
You need to. I mean, ideally, we would have kind of a 3D map of this thing that people could download and explore on their computers.
A virtual tour of the A-level men's room.
I actually had a question that I was interested in knowing if anyone had the answer to.
I'd like to get your question. Did the caller have more questions, or did the caller want to stay on the air?
Actually, that was really all I had to add.
Okay, great. Thanks for calling. And if you want to call back, or if other people want to call, the numbers are 621-9728 and 268-9728. So please go ahead, Tom.
Okay. Obviously, this Doherty Hall bathroom drama has been a problem on and off for, 4 or 5 years, you were saying?
It's been longer than that.
A solution for others.
Exactly. So for all this time, it's been recognized as a tea room. And people apparently have known about it the entire time, and I'm sure that it's gotten up to administration, I mean, to the point that they've had things posted before. So if this was indeed a problem... My question is, why didn't the university a long time ago set forth some official policy on the subject so that if offenders were caught, there would be an on-the-book, detailed, official way of handling the situation? I mean, if there was a problem, why wasn't the problem dealt with in terms of passing legislature?
So I have a maybe too obvious of an answer. If they think it breaks Pittsburgh law, I don't think they need to set campus policy that duplicates that statement.
Well, no, but I mean, campuses often do have explicit policies for dealing with, for example, public intoxication that are different than
usually
local
if
law.
They want to be more strict, though.
No, usually it's if they're less. I mean, usually, really? Like, right, yes, campuses like often have explicit policies that they'll handle. You know, things that are sort of considered like boys will be boys activity, like public drunkenness by undergrads, like that they'll handle that internally as opposed to turning them over to the regular cops. So, I mean, with this, though, there's this issue of sort of this institutionalized approach to, I mean, it's sort of an official, I mean, you never hear this sort of activity talked about in the mainstream, right? And so I can see them sort of just not thinking about it explicitly the way you think about sort of drunkenness.
But I guess if it's something that was a problem enough that merited, you know, hanging those posters and that still didn't solve the problem, maybe that should have been considered a while ago that something should have been done.
Mm-hmm. They only do something when they get enough complaints because it takes manpower, it takes time, and quite honestly, they just don't want
to
deal with it.
See, that's what I just understand. It also takes manpower to hang signs. It takes manpower to
not really.
Doors.
No, if the patrols take a lot more time than just hanging signs.
Hmm. Yeah. We do. I hate to keep interrupting us, but we have another fabulous caller on the air, and we'd like to hear your questions and thoughts, concerns, comments. So is the caller on the air?
Hello, is that me?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Hannah, thanks for calling.
Yeah, hi. I just had a comment that one of the gentlemen had said about reprimanding the 10 individuals and those who were not CME students should not have had the same treatment as those who were not CME students, or those who did not go to CMU should have been reprimanded by the city police. Well, I just think that you're creating a double standard that, you know, because you're CMU students or because of the CMU students that were involved, that you should, like, handle that internally and it should be hush-hush. But those who were not CMU students can go off and be, you know, held by the city police. Well, that's wrong. I mean, you have 10 individuals that were involved in this. That's a pretty many individuals that were committing a crime. They were having sex in a public place. I personally would not want to feel insecure as a man or as a woman going into a public facility and not knowing what I was going to run into or what to expect. And for you to say that, you know, usually you handle the CMU situations internally, to me that's making the public unaware as to the concerns that they have if they want to attend that university or if they want their child to go there. I mean, to me, I think you should really reevaluate your statement is what I'm saying.
Well, you make an excellent point, and I think argue it very well. My point, which I have not really made fully clear, the reason that I think CMU should handle certain things internally is because I really believe, and you're all willing to argue with me on this, that CMU students are young. They're not fully adult, and CMU is in a position where it's apparent to some degree, and this is well recognized. In all kinds of situations, CMU has a responsibility to take care of its students more so than other institutions. If a student gets in trouble, CMU is liable in certain ways if they don't adequately protect their students. So in the same way, I think CMU, and this is my opinion, also has a parental-style responsibility where if their students, you know, err and need to be corrected, they ought not to necessarily face the full adult smackdown. They should be corrected in a somewhat more gentle, more nurturing environment rather than facing, if you will, sort of the cold, harsh reality of adult life. And
if I may interrupt, I mean, you're talking about students who are 18 plus years of age, and as an 18-year-old, you are considered an adult, whether or not you act that way or not. And I mean, these individuals knew exactly what they were doing. They had gone to the bathroom, and they wanted to engage in this sort of activity, and they were well aware of the ramifications of such. However, they laid all disregard to that, and they, unfortunately, to their disadvantage, were caught.
Right.
And for you to say that you don't treat them as adults, to me, that is just... asinine. I mean, that's insane. I mean,
right. Well,
they are adults. They're committing an adult act and a crime that is punishable as an adult.
Can I step in here for a second? So, Kelly, you've raised three issues. One is the idea of fairness, treating the non-CMU people differently than the CMU people. And a lot of us here feel that however it was handled, treating the people in the same way would probably be the right thing to do. And that was explicitly given as a reason by the police chief. The second is the idea of whether or not university students are fully adults. Of course, in a legal definition, except as far as drinking goes, they are adults. But there is a long tradition of universities treating their students with kid gloves, so to speak. As I've mentioned before, especially in the context of drinking, universities often handle incidents with drinking and drugs separate, like apart from the normal legal system, in a way that's designed to not expose their students to the full sort of glare of the justice system. Whether or not it's right or not is another story, but there is a long tradition of universities doing that.
Absolutely.
And the third point you raised was the idea of publicizing this event so that people whose children might go to CMU would know about it. And I'm not sure that it's the duty of the legal system to alert the public as to what's happening in a university.
Well, for your second point, God, you said so much I wanted to comment on. About the publicly notifying people about this, it may have, could have been more tactfully done. However, I think it is very important for the public to know what sort of situations go on at university, because It is not, I would not, I personally went to Duquesne, and I do not, and Duquesne hides a lot as well. And they're because it's a private university, because it's Catholic, and they do not want, I don't think many people to know the situations that go on at the university. And I think CMU has a tendency to do the same. So being a parenting sort of body is not really the university's, I don't think, their first priority. I think it's really keeping their stats good.
Well, clearly it's, I mean, clearly it's not the first priority, but it is something that it is a role that universities in America have stepped up to.
That's right.
So.
But the second issue about, I do think that they should be obligated to say that publicly, because that is, like I said, it would just be like fudging rape standards or statistics.
Perhaps. I mean, it's the duty more of the sort of our free and vibrant press to sort of deal with this, which it has. There have been stories that have appeared on television and in the print media and in the Tartan, which is CMU's local, or which is CMU's own paper. So there's no issue of a cover up here.
I know that, and I didn't. That's why I corrected myself, because I didn't want to imply that, you know, that should be done or that shouldn't be done. But with regards to your comment about that, a college that your university that you attend to should be is trying to protect, I don't think that is. I mean, protect, yes, in some ways, but in this case, I don't think so.
Okay.
This was a different sort of situation.
Okay, caller, thank you very much for your comments.
Thank you. Bye.
I think we've got another caller queued up, so I think we should just get right to the next caller. Is that true? I don't know if our producer is fully conscious.
She's elsewhere.
Our producer is super conscious, I don't. So, yeah, we do have another caller.
So, hello, caller.
Hello.
Hello, thank you for calling.
Hi. I missed some of what you were just talking about, but so I hope I'm not repeating anything. But I can't even believe the statement that was just made about, and this is not to argue whether or not campuses should or should not have their own policies, but they certainly don't create their own laws. Campuses are not many countries.
Well, they sort of are functionally, actually.
No, they are not.
Carnegie Mellon definitely is. Yeah. If you are caught, if you're underage and caught in an intoxicated state, you will not be arrested. You will be taken. You will be escorted back to your room. If you are endangered, if your health is endangered, you might be taken. You will be taken to seek medical attention. But anyone that reports that will not be issued a citation or anything like that.
Underage drinking is not not the issue here.
The issue is in this example of how the university treats its students differently than it has a different legal regime set up for them than that of the city as a whole.
So recall that it has its own police department, so that it can. One could argue a reason for that is so that they can treat people on campus differently than Pittsburgh police treat people in Pittsburgh.
Exactly. We definitely are. We also have.
Well, what other crime besides drinking do you think fits under this bill? As the previous caller mentioned, rape. Do you think that people should be treated differently for that? Is date rape on campus a different crime than it is off campus?
It has been considered, so.
No, but I mean, usually these are the sort of usually these are victimless crimes. Drug and alcohol abuse is easily the biggest one. I can't think of another good example offhand.
I mean, I think there are some. I mean, quite obviously, there are some crimes. Rape being one of them.
Fights.
I mean, yeah.
Like, I had a roommate attack me, and that was handled completely internally. Things like that are handled internally. It could be taken externally, but we handled it internally.
I think a lot of it has to do with something the other caller had mentioned as well.
The cover-up idea.
Exactly, and I think that's a big part of it. No college necessarily wants to release a whole huge line of statistics regarding an exorbitant number of crimes committed on campus. So I think,
they do actually. University campuses publish relatively clean, complete statistics.
It was all skewed.
Yeah, I can't.
Well,
I think to say that things are covered up, I think implies more of a. I guess I mean it is a negative connotation, but I wouldn't necessarily say that it's a negative thing.
I don't think they're doing it to cover up as much as, again, because there's this idea of the university sort of being acting as a parent to its undergrads.
Right.
That notion makes me want to vomit. I can't even believe that you would suggest that somehow there is a a filial instinct between student and university.
Of course there is. Of course.
I'm going to tell you as a student. As a student myself, I definitely feel that relationship between the school and myself. I definitely look right now toward the university as more of a governing institution in my life than the country itself.
It might be a business,
but the way that we have our security is our insurance for that business.
Speaking of someone who's attended both a large public school and smaller private schools, the smaller private schools tend to be much more parental than the large public schools.
Well,
they tend to be much more manipulative, too, in terms of those kinds of statistics that they make available to the public because they have more control over it.
Definitely.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, that I would agree with. But in this case, as has been discussed, it has been reported in all the media, at radio, the level of television and press.
If you're a parent and your child is applying to come here and you want to see those kind of statistics, does something that's handled internally get included in that report that the parent would see in another state?
They do, actually. Like, campuses publish publish essentially logs of their internal crime reports. Whether or not, stuff that doesn't get handled with an official citation by the campus cops appears or not is another matter, but they do publish sort of complete statistics about their own internal write-ups of crime.
And when it comes to issues like rape, a lot of things have to do with whether official charges were actually pressed or not. I know that instances where...
Well, that's true in any crime.
Right, exactly. Sure. But especially like on college campuses, they're not going to report it unless one of the people has made an official report.
Mm-hmm. Who would have thought this would end up being not so much about sex and more about the parental role of the university? Anyways, caller, we're sort of running out of time. We appreciate your comments. Is there anything else you...
I just wanted to, actually getting back to the idea of how it's been reported, I wondered if any of you had seen any of the coverage up from the university. I just wanted to mention a TV report I saw, which I thought was appalling. I mean, in some sense, I am on your side, chain gang and so on, because they kept speaking to students, and every last person who spoke was outraged and horrified that this activity was happening on campus. And I don't know if anyone else saw any televised reporting. Certainly print reporting wasn't quite as biased, but that's all. Thanks.
Thanks.
Bye.
Well, thanks so much for calling. If anyone else wants to call in, the numbers are 621-9728 and 268-9728.
See, I think one thing that I guess is important is that the event itself, I think, has less to do with Carnegie Mellon than is being kind of portrayed. I mean, if you just look at the arrests that were made, just recently, 70% of the people in that bathroom were non-CMU students. I mean, this wasn't a facility used mainly for students. It wasn't used within the college. It was kind of a more grand scale, open to the public sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Is that true? Can the people who have sort of more experience comment on whether or not it's actually primarily CMU or not?
Well, I'm going to tell you right now, and Andy will speak with me, I think, on this one, that I know a lot of gay people on this campus, and Andy knows a lot of gay people on this campus, and I can't think of a single person here who's ever used it, who's ever discussed it. And I think that speaks in itself to...
I know CMU undergrads who've used it. I know people who go there. Sure.
That's fine, but I'm just telling you from my experience, I've never
known
any...
I'm telling you from my experience.
Not to whether or not CMU people use it. Let's talk to whether or not people from the outside use it.
I mean, it's a San Diego-based website that they kept referencing that had this listed.
Because people send it in. So someone from CMU sent them a little email saying, oh, I know this great site.
But the knowledge that it exists is out there in the public domain.
And it's been out there for years.
It's been out there for years.
Yeah.
And, we have another caller.
Hi, panel. I was just wondering about something that might not have been raised, which is of the seven people that weren't CMU students, could they have been, say, staff or faculty that just aren't being named? Could it have been more of an internal situation than
That's a good point. I don't think I know precisely. My impression was that the three people were affiliates and the seven were non-affiliates, but I actually don't know that for certain.
Yeah, I think that's a good point.
I think that was claimed, was that they were, in fact, the words that were used, I believe, were affiliated and not affiliated.
Okay.
Okay, so...
And I guess the second issue I wanted to raise is that kind of as a young person having wandered in on that, it was fairly traumatic, and I don't know if my parents knew what to make of it or what I could make of it. But
wait, you wandered in on it with your parents?
No. I wandered in as a four-year-old and heard some weird noises coming.
As a four-year-old?
Yeah.
So
not here, but in another situation, and kind of didn't know what to make of it. Asked my parents, and I think that was kind of forcing something unnatural on them to have to explain it, or they didn't. They just kind of gave me a strange look. And
well, can you tell us a little bit more about that experience? Did you witness something?
No. It was just coming from a different stall and noticing 2 feet under the door and hearing noises.
And you asked your parents about it. So you sensed there was something strange about that, and you asked your parents about it, and they kind of were uncomfortable or didn't know how to explain it to you.
Yeah, and that was kind of a nasty situation for them. I don't think I had thought much about it until I'd kind of heard about these sorts of things, and all of a sudden it clicked. But it was kind of disturbing, and it was something I wouldn't want to force on parents.
I mean, I don't think we've raised the issue at all of, I mean, the issue, I guess, isn't whether or not it's appropriate. I think it's pretty much been deemed inappropriate on every level. But
yeah, I mean, I don't want to keep jumping in. I don't want you to finish your thought. But I want to sort of register my disagreement with that claim. I mean, it's sort of hard to argue. I seem to be sort of like the bleedingest liberal here. I mean, I'm not sure you can say that when you argue that something's inappropriate, you have to sort of argue from some set of principles. And I think the standard one is, you know, who gets hurt, or you know, what is the harm to society or to others, or you know, or some people argue, I guess, from religious grounds or from, you know, some other set of principles. But if you look at it honestly, I think we permit all kinds, and kind of laugh off all kinds of public sex, like teenagers making out in their cars in the park, teenagers, you know, having sex in their car after the prom or whatever. You know, no one is calling that inappropriate. You know, kids will be kids after all. And so,
well, to be fair, that is a different, I mean, that is sort of the system. I mean,
there isn't as much potential for a 3-year-old wandering in a park at 11 o'clock to run across
right.
And people having sex.
Police
in their
do
car.
Patrol. I mean, I don't know.
I mean, there undoubtedly is a double standard between sort of like a teen makeout spot and, you know, like tea rooms.
I think the world of difference between the two things you're talking
about.
Right. I don't think it's a double standard. No, I don't think so at all.
Okay, so maybe we're going to go into that. I mean, the hazard in making an analogy is that there are things that are similar and things that are different. The point I was trying to make is you need to identify what is inappropriate about this behavior and why. And I don't think fundamentally two men that want to have sex somewhere is, you know, in public is fundamentally inappropriate unless you can identify the hazard. And the hazard is, you know, exposing children.
We do have sort of generic standards of sort of public decency of what's appropriate in a public place and what's not. And I think you can apply, I do agree that I don't think it's appropriate in a public bathroom. I think that you can sort of apply those standards as well. I mean, in a sense, there's no harm in somebody sort of peeing against a wall.
Right.
And yet that's illegal as well, you know. I mean, that's a victimless crime unless, like me, you believe that walls have souls.
Okay, and so I'm sorry, the caller is probably still in the air. Did you have another question? We have actually got a lineup.
No, that was lined it. Up.
But thanks for calling in. We've got two more callers on the air. I'm sorry. We've got another caller in the air. Please go ahead.
Hi, it's me again.
Hi.
Hey, I'm only calling because I have been arrested for public indecency for being in a heterosexual involvement in a car in a park.
Oh, that's fantastic. And did you spend the weekend in jail?
No, but I got a rather hefty fine and found out really the hard way at what I thought was a very laughable situation at the time that public indecency is a very ugly crime to be committed of, and then I had to hire a lawyer later to get my record expunged.
Oh, this is fantastic. So tell me, this is actually really interesting to me. So what were the details of the situation and you know, what kind of hassle did you go through once you encountered the authorities?
Well, the hassle was exactly what you would imagine. Darkness interrupted by flashlights and the scramble for clothes, and there you have it.
Well, but sorry,
more the legal hassle. What happened after the cop?
Should the police write it? I mean, were you arrested? Did they write a ticket?
Yes, I got a ticket. I was not arrested. I did not go to jail.
Caller, I just have to the little FCC implant in my brain is making me say the next phrase, you are listening to WRCT 88.3 FM Pittsburgh. Thank you.
Well, I'd like to know what the fine was, because these guys got $206 fines.
All right.
Yes. Oh, boy. This was in 1987 or 88. It was when I was in college. However, I was not on campus grounds. And I, to be honest with you, I don't remember. I know that it cost close to $500 to have the lawyer expunge the record. I think the ticket was $375.
Oh.
I don't know why that number.
So you were issued a ticket and actually not hauled down for booking.
Correct.
In jail, right? So this was more of like a speeding. We were talking about this distinction earlier.
Had you been on campus at the time, do you think it would have been handled differently? You said you were off campus when it happened.
Had I been on campus at the time, I don't know. We also there was also a famous place for public sex in the stacks of the library when I was on campus, but I never had sex there, so I have no idea. But they also had a crackdown. They went through a crackdown episode very similar to this.
That's interesting. So what is the legal argument by which you get your record expunged? I mean, who do you have to blow to get that to happen?
It's a common practice with first offenders.
I wish I could have blown somebody. It would have been cheaper.
It's a common practice in certain kinds of legal offenses for first-time offenders that a deal gets cut where you sort of plead guilty, you know, do community service, and the record gets expunged. It happens for public drunkenness. I know friends for whom it's happened with public drunkenness.
But I guess the caller had to fight for this and get a lawyer
right.
And so on.
Sure.
So.
After the fact.
Yeah, right.
Well, actually, years after the fact, because I had to have a quote-unquote clean record for a number of years before I could even apply. Public indecency is a serious, serious crime. I mean, think if one of these people wanted to run for public office. Oh, there's that little public indecency on their record.
Right.
So I'm not suggesting that it's a light crime, and it's one that I've been ticketed for myself.
That's interesting.
But I don't think that it's something that the university can shield you from, or should shield you from, or shield the rest of the public from. That may be naive, but
I agree. I think the fact that the Pittsburgh police were brought in was probably the most appropriate means. I definitely agree. I agree with that completely.
But I think spending the weekend in jail was extreme.
Right.
But
yes.
Once this campus cops hand him over to the city cops, it's completely out of their control.
Yeah.
Right.
And how can campus police handle the citizens of Pittsburgh? I mean, they have no authority to do that.
And on the issue of fairness, everyone had to be kind of grouped with the same crime, which I agree is completely fair.
I don't think that's true. I think campus police are fully certified police officers, and they can arrest anybody anywhere.
I think that's true.
There's only a very small portion.
I think, correct
me if I'm wrong, but as far as I remember, I think we only have two or three completely accredited police officers on the CMU police force.
That's way wrong. There's a lot more than that. And they are real police officers, and they can do anything that a police officer can do, but with a caveat that they only have jurisdiction, I believe, on campus.
It's on campus.
What you may be thinking of is we also have security guards, which are not
police officers. That's probably what I'm thinking of.
But we have significantly more than two or three police officers. Right. To respond to previous point really quickly about their public record, it's not known at this moment, right, whether or not this will go down on their record, and it's not implausible that some agreement will be reached where it will not.
Okay, well, I do know that LaPaglia requested, and what happened was that the public lewdness or whatever it was, the indecency charge was dropped, and the only charge remaining was disorderly conduct. And so
which is below a misdemeanor.
Right. I don't know how shameful disorderly conduct is, but I think it's a so-called summary offense.
Tough guys conduct disorderly conduct.
You can turn it into kind of a story that's actually kind of an asset on your record. So I don't know if the caller is still in the air.
I am, thanks.
So if you have no more questions or calls, we will terminate you with extreme prejudice. And
thank you very much, caller, for bringing like a breath of actual information.
Is that what that was?
Oh, I can't do a question. Caller, come back. Caller, are you still there?
Yeah.
So I have a question. So, you know, the arguments I'm hearing from my co-panel here seem to be, well, you know, since it's a law, you know, it must be applied, by the harsh rules of reality. But so my question to you is, since this actually happened to you, what do you think the law should be. What should society do for people who want to have sex in their car?
Are you questioning what the law should be or how should it be enforced?
The question is what the law should be and what should society's position be about people who want to have sex in the park or in public.
We should live in a world where everyone owns a van.
For example, I actually want to know, you know, how you felt and how you wish.
Well, at the time, I thought it was hysterical. This was somebody that I'd been dating for years, and to be caught necking in the park was actually kind of a jolt to our sex life. But, you know, unfortunately, it is a serious issue, and I can't divorce myself from what I consider to be fairness. And I don't think it's any more fair to me for me to be out there with my boyfriend than to happen upon, you know, some. Any other sort of orgy that I might not want to see or be a part of. I've been afraid in the Fruit Loop. I've been up in the Fruit Loop and been afraid.
I see. Afraid of...
The Fruit Loop is more funny
than
the
Skinner. Why would you go to the Fruit Loop if...
I didn't know that's what it was. It was when I first moved here and I was biking around and
okay. Yeah, people wander in.
What were you afraid of? And I think I know, but I'm going to make it.
I wasn't afraid of being mistaken for a boy, but I can't even explain it. I just
right, you weren't
immediately
afraid of an unwelcome
knew something,
sexual act.
Right, but I immediately knew something wasn't quite the
right.
Same as the rest of the park here.
Well, if you do walk into a park and see sex, right, you sort of might feel uncomfortable, as that doesn't often happen in most parts of parks.
Some people, though, might think free pornography. Right.
Because I think the reason I'm asking is I actually think there's a sort of a deeper psychological thing that goes on here. I mean, the kind of the sort of searing, burning look of desire and the searing, burning look of violence are actually pretty similar. And so if you find yourself in kind of a creepy area where men are kind of milling around and looking at you and not really making eye contact and not being friendly, you can actually seriously get a little concerned about, you know, is my safety at risk here? And I had a second point, and I don't know what it was. So I sort of wonder, you know, whether people, when they get in that kind of situation, whether their discomfort is partially based on the fact that they can't quite, you know, figure out whether they're safe or not.
Is that look menacing or sexually charged?
Right.
Well, it's probably menacing because the sexual charge is not directed at me. It's sort of a get out of here kind of look.
Your kind is not wanted.
Exactly.
No soup for you.
Thank you very much, caller.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
She was fabulous.
Is that who I think it is?
That was indeed past guest DJ Concubine Atron 9000.
Okay, fantastic. Well, we have about 5 minutes left, and so...
I believe we sort of stepped over one of Tom's points earlier.
Oh, I probably...
Okay, but it came out in the discussion.
I have a question I'd like to raise, which is that people have mentioned repeatedly that it has been publicized by, you know, main media, you know, TV and radio and newspapers after the bust. But it seems, as far as I know, it was completely unpublicized by mainstream media before this happened. Is that true?
Before this incident?
Before this incident.
I'm not aware of any media.
Well, it's not, I mean, you mean
before this?
It's not really. I mean, the fact that this was going on was unpublicized, or the fact that the CMU police department put up posters was unpublicized?
No, the fact that it was going on.
Well, I mean, every once in a while, I mean, doesn't stuff happen in the Fruit Loop? Every once in a while, Channel 11 or somebody will come down with cameras just to.
Right, but in particular, right. But the point I'm trying to make is that it seems like the university took a direct interest in just pretending that it didn't happen because they didn't want to deal with the issue of, you know, gay men having sex in the bathroom on campus.
Well, I'm not
and
clear.
They sort of suppressed it as long as they could.
Well, yeah, no, I'm not clear that it was suppressed. I mean, I'm just not clear that it was a news story, but like until the bust happened. Do you know what I mean?
No, but I agree that maybe if the university hadn't been so lackadaisical about it, that maybe there could have been some more effective means of stopping the entire situation before it had to come to 10 people being arrested.
By suppressed, I guess I agree with Tom. I mean that, you know, unlike, you know, public intoxication, where they deal with this continuously, right? They knew about this for many, many, many years and just sort of said, if we don't deal with this, maybe this won't be a problem.
Oh, I was thinking about the mainstream media talking about it as opposed to the university sort of publicizing that they want this to stop internally, right? You're talking about the latter and not the former,
right? I think probably a combination of the two.
Right. Well, but, I mean, the mainstream media, like, the university doesn't have much control over that, right? I mean, I just don't think it's a good story until the bust happened.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I could sort of see it being a story in the Tartan, right, you know. Gay right. Men have sex.
True. But that's Jody's fault and not Simeon's fault, right? Speaking as Jody is the living embodiment of
the
Tartan.
And the blame is going to level
Has any official from CMU made a rebuttal statement?
Have there been any public statements from anybody here?
The only public statement, from anybody at CMU.
Right.
The only public statement I wrote is what LaPaglia wrote, which he posted to the two B boards in response to people's comments. And I thought his response was pretty reasonable. He explained his thought process, why they chose to do arrests, why they chose to treat everyone the same, and basically all the things we talked about.
And I think he said something sort of congruent with what I'm saying, which is that we try to overlook this, or we try to, you know, make this go away with sort of light means, right, by posting signs, by, I believe he cited something else. And he said, and his words, I think, were, we have no choice but to make arrests, which I disagree with entirely, and as does DJ Changing, that, you know, they could have put up a video camera, they could have put up a security guard, they could have put up more posters.
Putting up a video camera sort of ruins it as a bathroom, qua bathroom, right?
That's a good point.
But no, I
closed the bathroom, right?
I agree. There were steps between what they did and arrests. I mean, sort of busting people and letting them off the warning is certainly a possibility, right? I mean, we're not arguing that there were more. And, in fact, this has been the main thrust of DJ Chain Gang's argument, is that there were steps that, like, in the escalation of the application of the law that were left out, maybe, right?
Right. But I think it seems, just interpreting what CMU has done about this, you know, up previous to their arrest, it seems that they were just trying to pretend it wasn't going on.
True, or it just wasn't enough of an issue for them to...
Well, they were receiving complaints, according to Chief LaPaglia.
True.
I mean, we can't... It's sort of too bad that Chief LaPaglia is not here. We can't quite know what his thought process is, but part of it... I'm sure what he does all the time is a kind of triage with his limited manpower, deciding what problems to fix and what problems can wait. And so, I guess this is the way he decided to handle it.
Yeah, but if the university can spend an entire semester fighting over whether or not three members of student council have a right to free parking lot passes, I think that an issue of this nature could have probably been handled.
True. Well, we can only hope that the university will sort of learn to be a little more sensitive.
Well, you know, right. Indeed. I mean, it's a little cruel of you to accuse me of false analogies when you compare the...
Oh, I'm not accusing you of anything.
I think that was kind of the whiny student senate problem. I don't think the CMU police had any interest in arguing about the parking passes, as far as I remember.
But who knows? Anyways, okay.
So I guess that's it. I want to thank... Are we done? What, 2 minutes? What does that symbol mean?
Peace.
That means peace and love in 2 minutes.
Okay, come on.
All right, meet me in the bathroom in 5. Just kidding.
So, I mean, do we have time for glorious wrap-up and summation from you, our fearless host?
I feel like I've spoken too much. I want someone else to do the summation. Jody, here's what I'm going to say. If I were to make you empress of all things, past and future, in a way that you'd apply justice and your sense of morality to the situation, what would be different? I mean, I would probably be dressed better. But in reference to the situation, how do you think things...
I just think that they should have been fined. I don't think they should have been arrested. And I don't think there is anything wrong with treating the seven outsiders should have gotten trespassing things as well. I don't think that's being unfair, because it was technically a separate crime for them.
Interesting. Just don't have sex in the bathroom.
Right, avoid the bathroom.
Yeah, I would like to say that in retrospect, my article, I kind of rattled it off on a Sunday morning after being given it Saturday night, and I'm afraid that people are probably thinking I'm completely nuts and saying sex in the bathroom is fine, but I really don't think sex in the bathroom is fine. I'm just thinking it's not as big an issue as they made it into, and I think that it was handled inappropriately.
That's okay. This show will take all the heat off of you.
Perhaps as a service to the community, we should offer the new great place for people to have sex on campus.
I live at...
and I live...
We can give out DJ Chain Yang's office number, but for the sake of public decorum, we won't. So, on that note, thank you for listening.
Thank you all for joining us. I want to remind, by the way, this show and all shows are available on the internet. Sextalk.wrct.org is our website. And we're out of here. Okay.